The United States District Court is now in session. The Honorable Timothy S. Hummond presiding. Today's date is March 7th, 2008. The case of Three Angels Broadcasting Network versus Gail and Arthur Joy et al. Civil action number 0740098 FDS. Counsel, please identify yourself for the record.
Three Angels, go ahead, please.
Yes, Your Honor. Jerry Hayes with Siegel, Brill, Rupner, Duffy, and Foster here on behalf of Three Angels Broadcasting and Danny Shelton.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Judge. Lizette Richards from Fierce, Pucci, and Kane, also appearing on behalf of the plaintiffs, Three Angels Broadcasting Network, and Danny Shelton.
Good afternoon. Mr. Joy, please.
Gail and Arthur Joy.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Mr. Pickle?
Yes. Robert Pickle here.
Mr. Pickle, I'm going to ask you to keep your voice up. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you okay.
Good. We're having a little trouble getting you. I hear you clearly, although I can hear you. So if I ask you to speak up, it's because of that reason. I'm going to start with, Mr. Pickle, I'm going to start with your motion to compel the plaintiffs to produce Rule 26A1 documents and for sanctions. And then when you finish your pitch, I'm going to hear from either Ms. Hayes or Ms. Richards about their opposition to that. So why don't you go ahead, please?
Well, initial disclosures were made on August 3rd, and Attorney Heald made an attempt to secure those documents and was not able to. And then in November, after I made my appearance, I negotiated with Attorney Hayes about how much notice that they needed to before I could inspect and copy those documents. And I was told 1 week would be adequate for coming by the their law office, and 2 weeks for coming by 3ABN. And so then I did give her notice, and then was told that I could not see those documents without entering into a confidentiality agreement. And it just doesn't make any sense to me to say that every last document in those initial disclosures is confidential.
Well, with respect to, and I have no idea exactly what documents are being referred to, but assuming for the moment there may be some documents that have a confidential quality to them, what is the situation with respect to what's your position with respect to a confidentiality agreement to those documents?
I have since negotiated with Attorney Hayes regarding Saylor had indicated that confidentiality agreement or protective order needed to be narrowly tailored. And so I did negotiate with Attorney Hayes regarding the question of donor information, information that could identify a particular donor, which could potentially raise privacy concerns. And so I suggested to her that the donor information that we need, the donation information that we need, could have the donor name, the identifying information that would identify a particular donor, redacted out with an accompanying confidential list, and that would tie the code, the donor code, with the donor information. And that would enable us to verify their claims regarding the decline of donations and the reason why the donations have declined. And then the donor information, the donor identity, you know, would not be disclosed unless the donors themselves didn't mind that. And I feel that's a reasonable proposal, but the plaintiff's counsel did not, and plaintiffs, I assume, did not want to do that. So I'm willing to consider the possibility that some things should not be out there for public consumption, and I think I'm willing to be reasonable about it.
But let me hear from Ms. Hayes. Is it Ms. Hayes? Are you the one that's
going
to speak on this issue, Ms.
Yes.
Hayes? All right, let me hear from Ms. Hayes Mr. Pickle, and then Mr. Joy, do you want to be heard on this at all?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, let me hear from Ms. Hayes, and then I'll hear from Mr. Joy, and then I'll hear, I may hear back from you, Mr. Pickle. Ms. Hayes, please.
Yes, Your Honor. First of
and
all,
speak up, please. So that
I will do my best. Thank you. This is a huge, huge room, and I'll try to project. I have just one preliminary matter that goes to this issue, and that being, well, actually two. The first of all being a standing issue related to Mr. Joy's discussion here or any participation by him in these motions. Not only did Mr. Joy not join in Mr. Pickle's motions or in his objection to our motion for a protective order, despite the fact that he participated in some of those good faith telephone conversations that we had about a potential protective order, but he also has not sought leave of the court to participate or to submit any sort of information to the court, either orally or by written submission. Failing to participate in the briefing or in any of the dialogue that has gone on concerning these motions, while he's certainly a party and is willing to sit and observe, I would strongly request that the court deny him an opportunity to present an oral brief to the court at this time, since plaintiff has had absolutely no opportunity to review or prepare any sort of a response or counteraction to whatever Mr. Joy may or may not have to say about this. That's a preliminary matter. The second preliminary matter is the issue of the tardy briefing. I'm not going to belabor that. Suffice it to say, we believe that tardy briefing should be stricken. Not so much because it adds anything new. There's no more case law in that brief than there was in the initial briefing, but because the additional attachment of so many exhibits that are not relevant to this, particularly the attachment of blatant hearsay exhibits, warns that the affidavit and the memorandum that it accompanied be stricken, not just for time reasons, but because of relevance. Second of all, the Mr. Pickle's sort of belated request to this court that he be granted leave, I think, indicates a sort of a failure to adhere to the rules, particularly in light of the fact that I don't blame the court for the scheduling of this motion, but the briefing on this matter was completed in December. The fact that we are here in March is a scheduling issue with the court, has nothing to do with the briefing issues. Mr. Pickle has had ample opportunity to provide this court both with a request to supplement and then that supplemental information, has failed to do so until basically a week before this hearing, Your Honor, which we believe is
Are you referring to Mr.
Yes.
Mr. Pickle's
supplement on the motion to
Yeah, but that's on you. That's in response to your motion for a protective order, right?
Yes, Your Honor. But I wanted to bring it up at this point because there are some issues that are going to be discussed in the motion to compel that are going to be related to that, particularly these exhibits that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. On the motion to compel, Your Honor, the first issue, I'm going to just briefly touch on what Mr. Pickle had to say. First of all, the issue of the initial disclosures, it is not accurate that Mr. Heel made an effort to obtain those 26A1 materials. In fact, Mr. Heel's challenge at that time in August and early September was that our disclosures had been insufficient because we hadn't provided documentation. We provided to Mr. Heel all the case law and legal authority for the proposition that we are not required at that point during the 26A1 disclosures to actually produce the documents, but are merely required to supply a list. Mr. Heel backed off from his position, realized that we had in fact provided an exhaustive, categorized list of the documents that were at issue, and never made a formal request for those documents as the rules require, despite the fact that he promised that a request for production of documents, interrogatories, and other formal written discovery was impending, was on its way. We never saw it, we never saw it, we never saw it. The next thing we hear about the 26A1 disclosures follows Mr. Pickle, who's now pro se, and follows his filing of the initial request for production of documents and interrogatories in this matter. We responded immediately. We objected to those interrogatories and requests for production of documents, many of which sought the 26A1 initial disclosure documents, and we subsequently filed, as soon as we were able to prepare the memorandum, the motion for protective order, which you'll hear later. So Mr. Heel, in his capacity as counsel for Pickle and Joy, did not make a request for those documents, and we were in fact led to believe that a formal request was going to be made as part of discovery. and it eventually was when Mr. Pickle served his RPDs and interrogatories. The second issue that Mr. Pickle raises particularly is that he tried to negotiate on the terms of the donor. There was an exhaustive 3-week period where Mr. Pickle, Mr. Joy, and myself exchanged emails, participated in telephone conversations, tried to resolve the issue of the motion for the protective order. The reason that that didn't get resolved was because after the plaintiffs produced not only one, but then a second version of a proposed protective order, neither of which met with Mr. Pickle or Mr. Joy's approval, we then said, we can't go any further. We don't know what you want. We need to see something that you would agree to.
What was the protective, what documents or classes of documents was the protective order addressing?
The protective order, Your Honor, again, and I'll get to more detail later if you'd like, but the protective order, the motion for protective order is designed basically narrowly tailored to address a specific kind of document, that being the proprietary trade secret confidential financial information of 3ABN as a company and Mr. Danny Shelton's personal and private financial information. The vast bulk of our allegations in the complaint, and if you review the pinpoint allegations of the complaint concerning the specific statements of defamation that we have alleged, those individual statements primarily deal with various specific financial transactions that Mr. Pickle or Mr. Joy or both on the various websites have stated were improper for whatever reason. It took money from the donors, or we bought property that was under market value using donor funds inappropriately. But we very specifically identified unique and individual transactions that the defendants had complained about in their web postings. In response to that, we realized, having to support our burden of proof on those claims, that the bulk of the material that we were going to have to produce, the stuff that we felt in our 26A1 disclosures was relevant to the claims, at least at that point, that we had made, and no counterclaims were made in the defendant in either of the defendant's answer, we felt that the material that we had in hand, which was primarily financial, audit, accounting, and bookkeeping information that proved up the propriety and appropriateness of those specific transactions. So almost everything that we had to produce other than the actual web postings themselves, which certainly Mr. Pickle and Mr. Joy had in their own possession, was this kind of financial information, either relating to donors, donors who had written us and said, we're not going to give you money anymore because of what we're reading on the internet about you, donors who sent us emails with those same kind of comments. When we reached an impasse over the issue of a protective order and trying to carve one out, I suggested that we provide to the defendants all of the information that we had to show that any donor to our ministry dropped their donations specifically because of the activity by Mr. Pickle and Mr. Joy. We know we carry the burden of proof. We further know that information related to other reasons that donors may have stopped giving, they ran out of money, tough economic times, they don't like Danny Shelton's haircut, and that actually happens, those aren't relevant because we're not making complaints and claims about those. We intend to prove up our damages specifically being lost donations related to people who stopped giving and told us they stopped giving because of these allegations. It is not necessary to obtain every donor's information and to conduct this national or international survey about why everybody else stopped donating. We're not making claims about those people. We are, however, willing to provide the emails that show that donations, why the donations dropped, number one. And we are also willing to tie those emails to both the dollar amount of the previous donation and the date at which the donation stopped coming in, whether it was a living trust that got revoked or checks.
Are you claiming that there's a privacy in those emails?
In the emails, Your Honor, well, not in the content of the emails, but we are claiming there was a privacy in the fact that the email contains information that would identify that donor. And again, we're willing to provide information, we're willing to provide the text of the email with the person's email and name redacted. And then, if for some reason Mr. Pickle and Mr. Joy feel that they need to tie that email to a specific donation and a specific date, we will provide that information too, using a code, either a number or letter code that links the email to the donation and the date. We feel very strongly that our donors give to this ministry on the condition that their donation remains confidential for a couple of reasons. First of all, because of what I would consider a somewhat more frivolous reason, which is that we're now in the day and age of telemarketers, spam email. People don't want their personal private information disclosed.
But you can move on from there.
Okay. And so our efforts to negotiate the protective order or some mutually agreeable protective order before resorting to the court basically broke down when Mr. Pickle and Mr. Joy refused to provide us with a proposed protective order that we could take to our client and have them look at and see, is this something you could agree to? Could you live with this? Certainly the donor issue was a sticking point, but we felt that we had provided a very reasonable solution to that.
What other categories of and I don't really need to hear your explanation at
sure.
the moment, I might sometime, but what other categories of documents are you claiming the confidentiality agreement would pertain to?
Again, we're talking about bookkeeping,
yeah.
accounting, and auditing records. The only exception to that would be those materials that have to be just open
so
to the public.
So financial records and donor.
Yeah. Financial
donor.
Records, both commercial for 3ABN and also private ones for Danny Shelton. One of the matters, and I've been asked specifically by the magistrate judge in the District of Minnesota to raise this to the court's attention, but Mr. Pickle caused to issue a subpoena in the District of Minnesota seeking bank records, personal bank records for Danny Shelton. We objected to that subpoena on the grounds that it sought information that was not relevant to the claims in this litigation. We also made a motion simultaneous with the motion to quash enforcement of that subpoena, asking that the court in the District of Minnesota, that honorable magistrate judge, stay the enforcement and remit the matter to this honorable court for consideration, this court which has had jurisdiction over a number of discovery-related disputes in this matter and who is certainly more familiar with the case. That honorable magistrate judge is waiting to hear what happens with the motion for protective order and the motion to compel.
What's that magistrate judge's name?
The magistrate judge is Judge Arthur Boylan, Your Honor. And Magistrate Boylan, as I said, has taken that matter under advisement, sort of staying the stay, if you will, in order to sort of see what happens here. Because the arguments that we've made in the motion to quash, again, are very relevant to the issues of the confidentiality, the donor information, the financial information that needs to be, we believe, kept confidential. The motion to compel, Your Honor,
No, I'm not there yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I want to do these one at a time.
Absolutely. The motion to compel.
No, I'm not ready yet.
Okay.
Thank you.
Not the motion for the protective order. The motion to compel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not
the motion.
Okay. I just don't want to. I apologize if I misspoke.
I apologize.
That's okay. Contrary to the briefing that Mr. Pickle has submitted to this court, we never agreed to produce the 26A1 disclosures at any point without a protective order being in place, either a mutually agreed upon one or at least having had the opportunity to come to this court and seek a protective order governing those financial documents. I'll quickly go into my own little issues here. As to the motion for sanctions, we have already indicated that we will produce whatever documents are relevant and subject to production without cost to Mr. Pickle and Mr. Joy as far as the 26A1 disclosures are concerned. Any other costs, Your Honor, we would believe to be a punitive and unwarranted under the facts of this. Again, we're not making a purposeful delay here. We genuinely want to show that 3ABN is an upright, financially proper ministry, but we don't want to turn those documents over that are proprietary, confidential, trade secret, and Mr. Pickle hasn't challenged that those documents are proprietary and trade secret materials. I'll talk about that a little more on the issue of the motion.
Do you have a copy of the latest proposed confidentiality agreement?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Was it in the materials?
Yes, we did attach a copy of the current proposed version of the protective order to our notice of motion in motion for protective order.
Okay, then I've got it.
So that you have that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. George, let me start with why with Ms. Hayes' position that you really have no standing since you have not joined into the fray with respect to the Mr. Pickle's motion to compel them to produce documents?
Well, my thoughts on that are that, number one, the protective order came out as a direct result of the motion to quash. Subpoenas, okay? The subpoenas were clearly done for both parties. No particular...
Which subpoenas are we talking? The ones that were referenced, the ones out in Minnesota?
Well, no, there were a series of subpoenas that were issued to get third-party documents to prove our case. The plaintiffs have argued that we are obviously purportedly guilty of defamation per se, and we are prepared to get the documents that are necessary, obviously, even if it takes third-party documents. And I understand that some of the documents they're talking about, they claim to have either been destroyed or have been, the parties don't have them.
Let me interrupt you. Before we get to that,
right,
there's a threshold question of whether you get to address the court
okay.
on this motion only because you didn't weigh in, either in writing or any other way.
Well, we really have weighed in, Your Honor.
Well, we's the plural, and you are named as an individual. So
absolutely,
that's what I need to flesh through before we go too much farther.
I am named as an individual, and in fact, while I'm named as an individual, I was a party to the subpoena. I have participated, as you already stated, in much of the discussion related to the protective order. I didn't feel it was necessary for us to duplicate our efforts. We worked together on all of the information that Mr. Pickle has put in, did much of the research together. Frankly, he has ECF. It was much easier for him to file everything. Therefore, it was easier to do it under his name. The frank fact is that, you come down to the question of who's representing who on the other side, who's representing 3VN, who's representing Sheldon. The subpoenas in Minnesota, for example, okay, they're only representing Mr. Sheldon. They haven't represented his private corporation that was brought up in the discussion. They're clearly not representing 3ABN, okay, and yet they issued a blanket motion to quash those subpoenas. So I don't believe that we have a problem with the issue of standing here.
Well, you do, but let me just cut to the chase. What you need to do in the future, and I'm going to listen very briefly to what you have to say because it's duplicitous of what your partner, Mr. Pickle, is saying. But what you all need to do in the future, when you file a pleading, you should put both names on it so that we don't have this issue.
Okay.
What I'm going to do, one of the rules that we have is that one party gets to speak on behalf of everybody. So even though Mr. Pickle has already kind of crystallized your position, I will hear a few minutes from you, but I want to keep moving as well. So if you wanted to go to the merits of this, why wouldn't, and I'm going to ask Mr. Pickle the same question, why wouldn't their financial information be subject to a confidentiality agreement?
The key reason that the financial information shouldn't be subject to their blanket protective order, and that's the problem with this particular case. Three times now they have tried the blanket approach to trying to get, number one, get the case impounded. Number two, they approached the issue of a protective order during the course of the 26F hearing that we had before Judge Saylor. And then number three, once again, the issue came up before Judge Saylor in the status conference on December the 14th, before, 3 days before, they filed their motion. Judge Saylor made it very clear in every single one of those cases that these people were to provide a narrowly tailored order. Furthermore, this court has already spoken on the issue of some of the financial documents they're talking about. For example, accounting records. There is a case that went from this court under Judge Saylor to the First District Court of Appeals and was upheld that very, very clearly says that the accounting records are not privileged. And
we're going to get to that in a minute. What about their donor list?
Well, Your Honor, if there are donors in there who have clearly said they're not interested in donating anymore for whatever purpose, and so far we've only seen one, okay, which, by the way, that donor contacted us directly, all right, and told us what the real story was. We can't see where anybody who has said they're not going to contribute to these people would ever be confidential. They clearly have a position. There would be no reason why they would be confidential. We have the right to examine those people under the rules, and it's critical to our case of defamation per se. And the fact is that a big part of this issue is the whole question of did we or did we not make allegations that were in fact that would carry the test of whether or not there was defamation per se. In other words, were the accounting processes that occurred and were the transfer of real estates that actually occurred, did they pass the smell test? Were they acceptable under the generally acceptable accounting principles?
Well, and the point is that probably is subject to discovery. However, don't the plaintiffs have an interest in it not being disseminated to the world at large without a further court order? That what they're saying is you get to look at it subject to a confidentiality agreement that, you know, you can negotiate. And then if you wanted to apply to the court for an order that it would be further divulged upon a showing of good cause, that's usually the way those things work.
But you see, Your Honor, the problem with that premise is that it violates the premise that this court has laid out in Rule 7.2e. It should not be on us to prove that these documents are not privileged or not confidential. It should be on them to prove that those documents are confidential and privileged.
I agree with that, and okay. We're going to get to that. Okay, thank you. That helps. All right, now, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to go to the plaintiff's motion for a protective order. And Mr. Joy and or Mr. Pickle, I'm going to let one of you respond so you guys can think about who's going to do that. And Ms. Hayes, is this yours or is it Ms. Richards?
This is mine, Your Honor.
I'll hear you.
Thank you. Your Honor, let me begin by talking about Local Rule 7.2e. The rule governs the issues of filed documents and whether or not the court case as a whole and the filed pleadings in that case are going to be subject to impoundment, meaning that the filed materials are not going to be disclosed to the public and are going to be instead kept under seal. 7.2 does not address the issue of discovery, what is or isn't kept confidential as part of discovery. And we would argue that aside from this being a very common custom and practice when issues of confidential or sensitive material is involved, having the parties come together with a mutually agreeable protective order, since we were unable to do that, the motion for protective order had to be brought to this court, and there are strong rationale in favor of having one here. We made the motion specifically seeking to protect from disclosure or dissemination the trade secret, donor, and confidential commercial and private financial information. That was made in specific response to requests for production of documents that were served on us by Mr. Pickle, both on 3ABN and on Mr. Shelton. It was also served in response to the informal requests for the 26A1 disclosures that Mr. Pickle had made, and it was also made in response to these four subpoenas that Mr. Pickle, not Pickle and Joy, caused to issue from various courts. The only subpoena of those four that has survived, Your Honor, is one, which was issued from the District of Minnesota, as I've discussed earlier, that was where a motion to quash was heard before the Honorable Magistrate Judge Boylan, where that subpoena was issued from the proper jurisdiction, had the proper scope, and had a proper amount of time. The other subpoenas have all been objected to by the third-party recipients, and the issue of whether or not, first of all, that provides standing to Mr. Joy is another matter, but second of all, the motion for protective order was never brought to this court as this blanket request that everything in the case be either impounded or subject to seal. Instead, it was brought in specific response to very particular discovery requests that had been made of us for material we felt we could not, in good conscience, allow to be distributed to the public or to third parties. Second of all, the idea is to seek a proactive solution. The reason that we have included the entire category of financial and business records is because we believe that if we don't have at least that category. Now, we're not talking about other information. We're not talking about employment-related information, ministry-related information, theological information. We're simply talking about these very this very narrow window of financial bookkeeping and accounting and auditing documents. And the reason that we're talking about that category instead of individual documents is because we'd be here 700 times before the trial. It makes more sense to have a single protective order that the parties can work with, have a living document that governs the entire scope of discovery rather than being back on this court step 5, 10, 15, 20 times every time a new request for production of document, a new deposition is taken, or there's some additional discovery request that is made that would get to these exact same kinds of materials. In perfect alignment...
What is the protocol that the... I apologize, I read this material and I missed it. What is the protocol that your proposed protective order employs for the identification of confidential documents as opposed to non?
Your Honor, we have followed the federally sanctioned IBM Microsoft protocol for the confidentiality of materials. What will happen is if the document is it is part of that category of financial auditing, accounting, or bookkeeping documents, it is not subject to one of the exceptions we've already carved out for them in the protective order, but it falls within this narrow range of documents. We would then describe each document as being confidential prior to production. That's if the document comes from us. Once that the document is received by the defendants, if they take umbrage with our classification as confidential, they are entitled to come to the court and seek relief, as they would be with any protective order, even one that was mutually agreed upon by the
court. What uses can they make of the document, and to whom can they share it?
Absolutely. Again, per IBM, per IBM Microsoft protocol, Your Honor, they are allowed to share the document as long as the recipient has signed a similar confidentiality agreement. They are allowed to share it with expert witnesses, with deposition witnesses, and with other consultants that they use in order to prepare for trial. That's all set out in the protective order, and we, again, have carved that out for their use. Now, in alignment with the purposes, we did narrowly tailor the request, and there are voluminous fields of documents that we didn't address. It is only related to these very, pardon the pun, sacrosanct business and commercial financial records that are at issue. It only contains one outright prohibition on disclosure, that being related to the donor identifying information. If donors want to walk up to Mr. Joy's house, knock on the door and say, I donated to 3ABN and I don't want to do it anymore, that's their prerogative. But it's not coming from 3ABN. We believe very strongly that our donors give to our ministry with the assumption of confidentiality.
And so are you proposing a redaction on those? Or what's the proposal on donors?
Yes, Your Honor. In the reply brief that was filed, Mr. Pickle claims that there are three claims, that three defenses that they want to be able to prove with the donor information. The first, these are the only three justifications, mind you, that Mr. Pickle provides this court with why a protective order shouldn't be imposed here. The first one being that they want to be able to segregate income that 3ABN received from donors versus income 3ABN received from product sales and speaking engagements and that sort of thing. That can readily be done without having to disclose the individual financial donor information. The second issue that Mr. Pickle claims that they need to be able to prove and so have to have this specific donor identifying information is that they have to identify the reasons that the donors have stopped donating. Again, this goes back to the issue of the scope of this case. The only claims that 3ABN and Danny Shelton are making are that we have lost money because donors specifically stopped donating in response to Mr. Pickle and Mr. Joy's web and other defamatory activity. We don't intend to claim damages for people who stopped donating for other reasons. And for every donation that we claim came as a result of Mr. Pickle and Mr. Joy's defamatory conduct, we know we bear the burden of proof to show both the drop in donation and causality. We intend to do that. That information does not have to identify the individual donors in order to be relevant. Last but not least, he says they need it in order to verify that donors have ceased donations due to their conduct as opposed to our conduct. Again, that's basically a reiteration of the second point, which is we need to know why people stop donating. I don't care why most of these other people stop donating. I care about the people who stopped donating because they were misled onto Mr. Pickle and Mr. Joy's website with a trademark confusing URL, and why they stopped donating because of negative statements about our ministry, which were patently technically false that were made by these two defendants. Those are the only legal rationale that Mr. Pickle has provided with this court in order to block the imposition of the protective order. Your Honor, the burden of proof on a motion for protective order rides first with the moving party. We have to show a good cause showing that the information at issue is either trade secret, unduly burdensome, confidential, extremely sensitive. We believe we've made that case. And nowhere in Mr. Pickle's briefing does he ever dispute that. The only arguable dispute he makes to that is sort of a justification by saying, well, I'm not saying this stuff isn't trade secret, but the cat's been let out of the bag because one disgruntled former employee named Beryl Mundell went to work for your opposition. Well, the fact that one employee voluntarily disclosed information that we made efforts to conceal does not render 3ABN's financial, marketing, and other proprietary trade secret information subject to public disclosure. It does not dispute the sensitivity of this information, and it does not at all refute that we have made the requisite element one good faith showing. The second element shifts the burden of proof to the defendant to show that it is necessary and needed that the document be produced without the protection. Now, it should be noted, and I can't stress it enough, that we're not saying that relevant information won't be disclosed to the defendants. And the protective order provides them with more than ample opportunity to utilize and use that information in whatever fashion they seem fit for the mounting of their defense. What we take umbrage with is the publication of this material, particularly given the history of these defendants, their posting of publications, information, affidavits, and court documents on the internet, the publication of information which could not have come from any source other than either a former counsel of 3ABN, which is a problem in and of itself, or Linda Shelton, who is subject to an agreement that she won't disclose information about the company. Mr. Pickle argues, we have lots of information that's sensitive that we haven't disclosed. We have good judgment, and we're not going to release that stuff. Your Honor, the only reason that they haven't released that information is, again, because if they show that they have that in possession, it's going to put a couple of people in trouble. The issue of the motion for the protective order breaks down in a couple of other ways as well. Mr. Pickle argues that that without intent to publish or disseminate the information, there's no reason that we have to preclude its disclosure. Whether or not Mr. Pickle and Joy, in this instance, intend to publish all this information is not relevant. They may easily change their mind, as has been shown on their conduct in the various websites, which has now been expanded after the bankruptcy matter to include at least seven other Save 3ABN-based websites where they are posting this exact same information. Now, Mr. Pickle claims that counsel didn't confer in good faith before bringing the motion. That's patently untrue. The history that Mr. Pickle attaches to his own affidavit shows that we had email and telephone exchanges about this very thing. Second of all, Mr. Pickle claims this is a blanket order in violation of 7.2E. It patently is not. First of all, it doesn't speak to the issue of the filings that have to be made with the court, and the plaintiffs understand that if a matter is attached to a summary judgment motion or to some dispositive motion in the future, we will make a motion for a protective order, a motion to seal, in terms of the filing of those materials. But a protective order governing discovery is separate, it's distinct, and it's a very relevant and very common practice in civil litigation. Mr. Pickle claims that state and federal law mandate the disclosure of the information at issue. Untrue. The only information that law requires us to file, and it doesn't mean that we have to publish it all over the internet, it simply means we have to have it available or send it to a government agency, is our 990s and our annual financial statement, and that's an Illinois charitable contributions law. That information is, in our view, confidential. Although it does have to be published and filed, that's fine. Interestingly enough, however, as far as the Rule 26A1 disclosures are concerned, those documents were not part of the documents that we wanted subject to the protective order. So it's really, the issue of those mandatory public documents is not really relevant here. Mr. Pickle claims that disclosure is in the public interest. Now, there is no legal authority for this proposition. Frankly, no legal authority throughout Mr. Pickle's briefing or any legal analysis as to why this information is not subject to the protection that has been granted in other cases that we cite in our briefing. His claim that the information that is filed with authorities is incorrect. If the documents, the 990s, the financial statements that we file with public authorities contains an error, mathematical or otherwise, then the public is entitled to access all the source documents that made up that public filing. Again, aside from the fact that there's no legal authority for this proposition whatsoever, even if the reasoning held true, there's absolutely no reason to believe the information is false. The only evidentiary, quote-unquote, example that Mr. Pickle brings forward is this Lot 6 land sale. Mr. Pickle's affidavit is full of hearsay evidence. I would ask the court that it be disregarded pursuant to our motion to strike, but also because of the nature of the evidence. But second of all, the only documentary evidence that has been offered to this court related to Lot 6 is a warranty deed. And if the court looks at the one-page warranty deed, it will find that all Mr. Shelton was purchasing from 3ABN was a remainder interest in the property. He already had a life estate to the property and was only buying out the remainder of 3ABN, the company's interest in the land. There is absolutely no reason to believe that this transaction was incorrect or improperly reported to the IRS. There's been no finding by the IRS. There's been no criminal investigation, no complaint. There's been absolutely no finding by any determinative body from the Illinois Attorney General to the Department of Revenue that any of these documents contain any errors of fact whatsoever. If anybody could walk up and make broad allegations that it might be the case that they probably, possibly committed a factual error, everyone's books would be turned inside out upon the whim of individuals eager to have a look at the inside books of various companies. Related to this, Mr. Pickle claims that broadly, again, without any authority, the public has a right to know how the donations at 3ABN are being used. But this is not a publicly traded corporation, Your Honor. This is not a company with shareholder investors who are waiting for their money back plus a gain. These are people who have made a gift. If donors are concerned about what their money is used for, they are entitled to earmark their donations, and under Illinois charitable law, we are required to adhere to that request. If donors are further concerned about the use of their donations, they can stop donating. And, as this lawsuit alleges, they have indeed done so. The idea that it's a gift, that donors who have a concern about the money that they give, takes away this idea that the public at large is entitled to know all of this information. The government has already determined what the public is entitled to know. The publicly filed records are enough. Mr. Pickle also complains that the protections that we seek in our motion for protective order somehow implicate his First Amendment.
Counsel, how much longer do you have?
I have just one more. Implicate his First Amendment rights. Again, no legal authority, Mr. Pickle suggests that he might want to give the documents to Senator Charles Grassley, who's investigating various ministries. Mr. Grassley, the Honorable Senator, is more than capable of subpoenaing these records for himself if he actually believes that the ministry has financial issues. Last but not least, Mr. Pickle claims that he's entitled to defend his reputation. First of all, there is no counterclaim of defamation in this case. There have been no allegations that we have made any defamatory statements about Mr. Pickle or Mr. Joy or the defendants in general on any resource. Mr. Pickle's affidavit, which mentions one quotation in a broadcast by Mr. Shelton, is frankly insufficient to show that we've somehow engaged in this campaign of defamation against the defendants. Frankly, Your Honor, we are of the opinion that the defendants' postings on the Internet more than adequately speak for the character and reputation of the defendants, and it's not necessary for us to do anything more. Mr. Pickle is certainly entitled to defend his reputation, but how 3ABN's private financial records go to forward that is frankly beyond me and has not been proved up causally in Mr. Pickle's briefing. Your Honor, we believe that the protective order we have submitted to the court, with the safeguards that it presents, narrowly tailored to cover those financial records of the company and Mr. Shelton individually as it does, is a more than reasonable and adequate measure to maintain the confidentiality of very proprietary and trade secret information. We have provided the defendants with ample opportunity to use those materials once disclosed, And the only absolute prohibition that we're seeking is identifying specific information related to our donors. Information which I've already explained to the court does not satisfy the three legal criteria that Mr. Pickle cites for including the information. With all of that, Your Honor, we would request that this court grant our motion for a protective order, either in the form that it's in already or in a form that this court would deem just and reasonable.
Mr. Pickle?
Your Honor, did you say Mr. Pickle?
I did.
Okay. I would like to ask leave of the court to, I think I can be briefer than Ms. Hayes. I'd like to ask, because we can't exchange notes back and forth, obviously, Mr. Joy and myself, I'd like to ask leave of the court if I am not too long, if he could speak as well.
No, I'm going to let one of you speak because that's the rule.
Okay.
And frankly, I shouldn't let Mr. Joy speak, but I appreciate that your pleading was intended to be on behalf of both, even though legally it is not. So I'll let you speak, or Mr. Joy. And in the future, if either of you wants to speak, you're going to have to both be on the pleading.
Okay. Well, I'll see if I can go down through my notes here. The plaintiff's complaint covers a lot more issues than... It does cover issues other than just financial. It covers Annie's divorce and remarriage. It covers... It refers to... moral, ethical, and financial allegations, and that's a pretty broad sweep. It's a 501c3 organization that is soliciting donations from the public. And so the public, that's why the IRS requires organizations such as Free ABN to file 990s, is so that it can be subject to a certain degree of public scrutiny.
Public scrutiny doesn't necessarily mean that their financial information is available to the public. It's available to the IRS and whatever appropriate Illinois tax authority looks at their steps.
Well, I understand that not every single thing needs to be available. So you've got the 990, then you have the audited financial statements, which Illinois statute requires to be open to public inspection. Oregon does as well. I've got a printout that I received from the Oregon Department of Justice with documents that 3ABN has been sending its financial audited financial statements to the Department of Justice there in Oregon from 1996 onwards, and they are required to be open to public inspection. Now, in discussions I've had with Attorney Hayes, I have, the source documents, I have acknowledged that the public doesn't necessarily need to have access to the source documents, but, you know, one concern I had in this broad, sweeping proposed protective order, is that even the conclusions that, okay, like what is the true donation that came in a particular year? Since 2004, sales revenue has been lumped in with donations. So what were really the donations for 2004, 2005, 2006? If the IRS, the legislature has determined that the public has a right to know how much donations have come in, then I don't see why what that figure ought to have been, can't be disclosed.
Mr. Pickle, they're not saying that it can't be disclosed to you. They agree that it should be disclosed to you. They just don't want you turning around and making it public without a court order.
If the public has a right to know how much donations, the gross figure of donations that a ministry brought in, and the gross sales revenue minus cost of goods sold, those are figures on the 990. Then the public has the right to know those figures. Is my position.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as this lot 6 goes, on the 1998-990, 3ABN reported the sale of that house to the IRS at a loss. And so it wasn't just like what Attorney Hayes is trying to say, that it wasn't just the purchasing of a remainder interest in a life estate. There was an actual transfer of an asset from 3ABN to Plaintiff Shelton that he did not pay full consideration for. And the publicly available documents bear that out. Attorney Hayes said that there's no IRS criminal investigation going on. That's simply not true. There's been an IRS criminal investigation going on for more than a year. Attorney Nick Miller, I guess back in September, around mid-September, he was a board member of 3ABN at one time, and he told me personally that the IRS had contacted him. Now, when we bring up Attorney Nick Miller's name, former board member, he became concerned beginning in January 2005 with some of the things that were going on at 3ABN. And so he tried to put into place some reforms that would provide some accountability for Plaintiff Shelton. And he worked with a few other board members to that end, and Plaintiff Shelton ended up threatening him, figured out who was behind it, ended up threatening him and said, if you don't back off, I'm going to investigate your legal representation will be investigated. And Attorney Miller said, well, he's not that kind of an attorney, he didn't back off. What Attorney Miller said is that that Plaintiff Shelton's first wife, which would be his wife before Linda that passed away, his first wife's brother altered Nick Miller's billing records without his knowledge and then sent those billing records out to all the board members and made him look kind of shady. And in the end result was that he was forced to resign from his position in the board. Well, that's not the only allegation we have of document fraud. And so whatever document 3ABN does produce, the Plaintiff Shelton does produce for us, we need to be able to adequately challenge those documents that they are genuine. I guess would go for any information. So if they tell us that, well, they had these donors and they quit for this reason or that reason, we really do need to verify that that really was the case. This protective order, proposed protective order, I believe Ms. Hayes said that it was not a blanket protective order. My understanding is that by definition, a blanket protective order is one in which the counsel for the party can determine themselves what's going to be confidential or not. And this protective order does do that. It allows either the party, their counsel, to declare anything they want, not just financial information, but anything that they want to be trade secret, they consider trade secret confidential, and then it is immediately under seal and requires a court order to reverse that designation. If it was, Judge Thaler said on December 14 that any protective order would have to be narrowly tailored. And I don't think we would have such a big issue if this thing was really narrowly tailored, where it was confined to specific documents, specific types of documents. But it allows them, even things that we received from third parties prior to the filing of this suit, that when we turned over to them thousands and thousands and thousands of documents, Mr. Joyce feels that the conglomerate of documents between the two of us is around 7,000, and I think that's a realistic figure. And even those documents could be declared to be confidential by the plaintiffs, and we'd have to turn them over to them upon the completion of this case. Even though, people freely gave us these things before the suit was even filed. I have seen some cases where it's given me the impression that the plaintiffs should provide a privilege law, you know, describing in detail the documents that that they want to have declared confidential or under seal. And I think that's something, if that is the case, that something like that is necessary or advisable, that's something that we don't have in this situation. I would beg to differ with Ms. Hayes saying that we never agreed. I asked her, as far as producing the initial disclosure, I asked her how much notice she needs, and she said 7 days. She did not say in that letter that that there needed to be a confidentiality agreement. That didn't come up until I gave her the notice, the 7 days notice. Another issue, Judge Saylor explicitly said in our December 14th status conference that there would be no stay of discovery until this motion for protective order was heard. And Attorney Hayes had asked for a stay of discovery, and he explicitly denied that request. And so I think it's highly inappropriate that Plaintiff Shelton and his counsel asked the District of Minnesota to stay the subpoena until this motion that we're considering right now was heard, especially since the plaintiff never requested a hearing for this. Defendant Joy had to ask for a hearing in order for this hearing to be scheduled. And it didn't take so long to get it scheduled. It was immediately scheduled. Let's see. But I do believe that I can be reasonable about this, and there are certain things that, shouldn't be out there for public consumption. And I'm willing to consider that. But I do believe that we need to prepare an adequate defense, and that involves identifying donors that have actually quit donating. And there are cases out there where we could have one individual writing under multiple aliases and complaining to 3ABN about what's going on and saying they quit giving. But we actually need to identify the person. Is that person, each email, is that coming from a distinct individual? We need to verify the identity. And I think maybe that covers the gist of my concern.
Great. All right. Thank you, everybody. Under advisement.